Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to tonight's program. This hour is being sponsored by Vince Mosca in Saginaw, Michigan. And his message, thanks for all you do, Mike. Vince Mosca is the guy who ran in the 94th Congressional District in Michigan for the Michigan State House of Representatives back in 2010. He didn't make it, but he did run. And the rest of his message says, Mike, you and Kathy were first broadcast on Air America in the early August of 2004 when Molly was about a week old, if memory serves. From that August until that November, I couldn't wait until 10 p.m. when my store closed and you came on to scream across the sky. What you and Kathy did in the summer and autumn of 2004 awakened so many in my view. While Ohio and the presidency were stolen, at the wild conclusion, you laid the tracks for many to see what was coming and what to try to do about it. Thanks so much, Mike. Here we go again. Thanks, Vince. Especially now. Thank you for the support. I'll tell you, urinating on corpses, burning Qurans, the Haditha killings, where 24 unarmed men, Iraqi men, women, and children were executed by a group of U.S. Marines in Haditha, in Iraq. All those killed were civilians. The dead included several children and elderly people who were shot multiple times at close range while unarmed. An initial Marine Corps communique reported that 15 civilians were killed by a bomb blast, an IED, and 8 insurgents were subsequently killed when the Marines returned fire against those attacking a Marine convoy. However, other evidence uncovered by the media contradict that. The investigation by Time magazine claimed it found evidence that supports accusations that U.S. Marines deliberately executed civilians, including unarmed men, women, and children, according to an anonymous Pentagon official. 3 officers were officially reprimanded for failing to properly initially report and investigate the killings. On December 21st, 2006, 8 Marines were charged in connection with the incident. By June 17th, 2008, 6 defendants had had their cases dropped and a 7th found not guilty. The exception was former Staff Sergeant Frank Witterich. At an Article 37 hearing in October 2007, investigating officer recommended that Witterich be tried for negligent homicide in the deaths of 2 women and 5 children and that charges of murder be dropped. Further charges of assault and manslaughter were ultimately dropped. And finally, Witterich was convicted of a single count of negligent dereliction of duty. Witterich received a rank reduction and pay cut, no jail time. Iraqis expressed disbelief and outrage. After the 6-year U.S. military prosecution ended with none of the Marines sentenced to jail, a lawyer for the victims from Haditha said, quote, "This is an assault on humanity," end quote. Urinating on corpses, burning Qurans, the massacre at Haditha, and now this. And now this. People in Afghanistan have threatened to carry out revenge attacks after the shooting rampage. 17 civilians, of which 9 were children. 3 were women, shot as they slept in their beds. 4 men were killed. This was a case of mass murder. If ever there was a case of mass murder, this is it. The corrupt president of Afghanistan, the one who is involved in graft, corruption, fraud, Hamid Karzai, described the attacks as, quote, impossible to forgive, end quote. He said in a statement yesterday, quote, when Afghan people are killed deliberately by U.S. forces, this action is murder and terror and an unforgivable action, end quote. One of the few things that Hamid Karzai has said that is truthful. Apparently now there are fears of reprisals on both British and American soldiers. After a statement on the Taliban website described the attacks as committed by, quote, sick-minded American savages, end quote. And the statement vowed to, quote, take revenge from the invaders and the savage murderers for every single martyr, end quote. It's according to the French news agency. So it gets down to a couple of points for me. First of all, what has happened to soldierly discipline in the military? Seriously, what has happened to that? A, B, if the United States military, under the direction of the commander in chief, is going to allow or promote or insist upon deployment after deployment after deployment, how long do the military psychologists and psychiatrists figure it will take until an American soldier goes totally, blindingly insane and commits mass murder in Iraq, Afghanistan, the United States, his own family? How long? How many deployments? I wonder if anybody in the Pentagon has sat down and looked at the apparent evidence. Not cover-ups, not this bull hockey that passes as military justice against members of the military who have committed horrendous acts in the past 15 years in our adventures in Afghanistan and Iraq. No, not that. I mean psychologists who may or may not be impartial once they're employed by the U.S. military. But have they ever sat down and said, okay, the average American 19-year-old who joins the military with his eyes full of flags and mom and apple pie will be able to withstand X, whatever the X is, amount of killing, of being shot at, of dodging bullets, perhaps of being wounded, or that same soldier can stand, if he avoids being wounded, he can stand 2 deployments, 3, 4, 7. How many? Has anyone done that? Has anyone sat down in the United States military and said, okay, eventually our young men who join the military for whatever reason are going to reach a point where they come out of the ether, where they take a look around and the question's going to present itself. What am I doing here? Why has my country invaded this one? What is the reasoning behind this mass killing perpetrated by the United States military against the people of Iraq, the people of Afghanistan, the people of wherever? So that's another question for the psychologist. At what point does the 19 or 23 or 28-year-old ask himself that question, and what is going to be the answer? And I heard Barack Obama today, I don't know when he said this, maybe over the weekend, but the recent slaughter of women and children, deliberate, conscious murder of women and children as they slept in their own homes. And Mr. Obama said, well, this, I'm paraphrasing, this is not going to change my plan to remove everybody by what, summer of 2014, end of the year or something? This is madness. This is insanity.
Won't you leave me in my misery? Trouble.
The revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
Hour. I remember the My Lai massacre during the Vietnam invasion and occupation by U.S. troops, and how shocked when Seymour Hersh reported that story. I think it was from the New York Times. I'm pretty sure. And how there was mighty soul-searching that went on in the United States. Not by everybody, certainly not. A lot of people just used the term that was used for Vietnamese people and laughed about it. We still have people like that, really sick bastards in this country who just laugh at this stuff. Sick bastards who say, for example, that Obama had no business apologizing for the burning of Muslim holy books. Those are the people in this society who are cowardly down to the bottom of their feet. You give these people a weapon and stick them in a war zone, the first thing they do is pee their pants. Next thing they do would be shot dead by the enemy because they wouldn't know what to do. So the people in this country who minimize this or laugh about it or debase people in other countries, the countries that we invade, are people who should be handed a weapon and drafted and put on the front lines, if there is any such thing as a front line anymore, which there really isn't. But those cowards will never do anything. These are right-wingers who never serve their country in any capacity whatsoever. Nothing. Not the military, not civilian life, nothing, ever. So let's forget them. Write them off. They are useless. But the policymakers in this country, the political policymakers, whether it is a criminal enterprise like the Bush crime family or whatever you want to call the Obama administration, is that a criminal enterprise too? It damn sure seems like it. Sometimes doesn't it? What kind of proof do we need? Authorization to kill American citizens. Authorization to judicially execute people at the whim or decision, I guess, of the commander-in-chief or his advisors. The suspension of civil liberties where it concerns a right to privacy, whether it's your email account or your telephone, your cell phones. I mean, this is madness. It really is. It's a shame that Obama is this way. What a great leader he could have made as a progressive, as someone who really followed through on what he allowed everyone to think during the election in 2008. And we're coming up to another election, and given the fact that the Republican field is a bunch of rats and vermin, Obama's going to be reelected. You know he will. And he's going to pull with him huge majorities of Democrats across the country. I think the American people have had enough of this Republican hog snot. Hopefully what will happen is once these Democratic majorities are in place, not just in the House and the Senate, but also in state houses across the country. Once those majorities are in place, maybe then the American people, if we're going to preserve the system that we have now, maybe the American people will start rallying around and electing true progressives. I have my doubts about that, but that is an alternative to the country becoming a complete police state. And if it does become a police state, odds are to become a police state under a Democratic administration, because a Democrat, Republican, it's not that much different anymore. The difference is in these crazed right-wing thugs who are running for president, who ran for election for governorships back in 2010 and got elected. Those people are a definite threat. I mean, they personify, they embody American fascism. But sad to say, it will probably be a Democratic administration that is in power, just like it was Nixon who went to China to try to, one capitalist to another capitalist, one capitalist government to another capitalist government, one exploitive government to another exploitive government, to try to find common ground, which eventually the Americans and the Chinese did, economically as well as politically. Our capitalists decided that their capitalists were the kind of capitalists that they wanted to be here, but they couldn't be here, so they go over there. But I digress. At what point will it become clear to the American people? Is it going to take an invasion of this country? Is it going to take some sort of force coming in here and killing women and children in their sleep here before we realize what we're supporting, what we're doing? Is that what it's going to take?
Is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky?
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey, right? With Mike Malloy.
He can hear people cry. Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows there are too many people?
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Vince Mosca in Saginaw, Michigan. Thanks, Vince. He ran for the Michigan State House of Representatives back in 2010 and lost. He writes here. Anyway, he thanks us for the program, and he mentions that he first heard our broadcast on Air America early August of 2004 when Molly was a week old. And from that August until that November, Vince writes, I couldn't wait until 10 p.m. when my store closed and you came on to scream across the sky. What you and Kathy did in the summer and autumn of 2004 awakened so many, in my view. While Ohio and the presidency were stolen at the wild conclusion, you laid the tracks for many to see what was coming and what to try to do about it. Thanks so much, Mike. Here we go again. Thank you, Vince. Regarding the mass killing conducted by an American military person against sleeping women and children in Afghanistan, Prairie 2 writes, Intense stress will break a percentage of the men exposed to it. In itself, an occurrence like this one doesn't prove much of anything. The staff sergeant wasn't in this world anymore. Atrocities occur in war. It's only surprising that there haven't been more. The good news is that Republicans are starting to feel that urge to cut and run. So maybe we can get out. They will, of course, blame Obama, blame Democrats, blame those hippies in the army. Wait, wrong war. They will blame everyone but themselves. They wanted a good old-fashioned bloody war, as long as they didn't have to go fight. Read about the first battle of the Civil War and learn how people who came out in their Sunday best to picnic and watch the glorious battle. Yeah, and from Ron, Ron writes, the rules of conduct turned insane in Vietnam. 3 to 5 million Vietnamese were slaughtered. 3 to 5 blanking million people, plus 58,000 Americans who are still dying and suffering from that atrocity. How to stop the insanity? How to change the hearts of warmongering humanity? Thanks for the forum, Mike. Ron. Yeah, how indeed. I guess there's no way to do it, is there? Or it would have been done by now? You think? Is it tomorrow? The primaries in Alabama and Mississippi take place over here. And I read this thing that says, if you ask Mississippi or Alabama voters about President Obama's religious affiliation, well, down here in the South, the public policy polling, PPP, has released information showing that a majority of likely Republican primary voters in the Deep South are kind of confused. Yes, indeed. The Alabama survey of 600 likely Republican primary voters found that only 14% consider Obama to be a Christian, 45% say he is a Muslim, and 41% say they're not sure. And a similar picture emerges over in Mississippi. Of 656 likely Republican primary voters surveyed, only 12% said Obama was a Christian, 52% say, oh yeah, he's a Muslim, and 36% fell into that not sure category. Oh, God. I'll tell you, the ignorance in the South is so thick you could cut it with a piece of cornbread. And you know, again, people say, well, why do you stay down there, Malloy? Well, I don't know. The humor of it all, I guess, or to see just, I don't know, to kind of ride it out and see if the freaks down here will ever come out of their coma. I don't know. I don't hang around with people like that, and nobody I know hangs around with people like that. You know, well, we think he's a Muslim. You do? Why? Well, come on. You must have some reason to think somebody is a this or a that. What's your reason that you think Obama's a Muslim? Well, never mind. It really doesn't matter all that much, does it, Mississippi? I have in front of me here a letter addressed to the American people from former Senator Rick Santorum. And I think you should listen to this. Dear American people, when I think about government-mandated health care, I have the same response that any mature adult would have. It makes me want to throw up. That's why on my first day as president, I will repeal Obamacare. Well, actually, on my very first day, I'm going to repeal the Renaissance and also the theory of evolution. But I will definitely get rid of Obamacare by day 3-4 at the latest. You see, Obamacare runs counter to my well-documented position on personal freedom. I believe in the rights of the unborn child until it's born and wants a checkup. What will take the place of Obamacare? Well, as your president, I will institute Santorum Care, a health care plan that will cover absolutely no medical procedures whatsoever except one. Exorcism! For many years, possession by the devil has been America's number one health problem. Far more serious than those posed by cigarette manufacturers who have funneled millions to my political action committees. You don't have to take Rick Santorum's word for it that America's in the grips of a devil possession epidemic. Just watch any episode of Jersey Shore. You're probably saying to yourself, government mandating exorcisms are a great idea, Rick, but how will we find the devil babies to exorcise? Well, that's a good question, and I have a good answer. On my first day as president, I will order mandatory transvaginal ultrasounds for every woman in America. These ultrasounds will be a prerequisite to getting a driver's license at the DMV, where there's plenty of downtime for such a procedure. And additionally, they can be easily and safely performed by TSA employees or the airport security line. Or if an ultrasound turns up any telltale sign of a devil baby, you know, horns or tail, we'll schedule the woman for her government-mandated exorcism there and then. Now, I hope after reviewing Santorum Care, you'll agree that it's the best health care plan out there for you and your family. But just in case you're not sold yet, maybe this will seal the deal. Leeches are 100% covered. Vote for me, Rick. That comes to me from our good friend Andy Borowitz. Of the Borowitz Report, exorcisms, a death to report. I've never heard of him. Well, I did, but I'm sure, but the name didn't mean anything. I'm sure you know of him. F. Sherwood Rowland, Nobel Prize-winning chemist who sounded the alarm on the thinning of the Earth's ozone layer. He was among three scientists awarded the 1995 Nobel Prize for Chemistry for explaining how the ozone layer is formed and decomposed through chemical processes in the atmosphere. Those were the, remember the CFCs, the chlorofluorocarbons, a byproduct of aerosol sprays and deodorants and other household products, remember that? He calculated that if we were to continue at an unchanged rate of using those things, this is back in the, when did this, the 70s and 80s, the ozone layer would be depleted after several decades. And the prediction caught enormous attention, was strongly challenged by the right-wingers because they challenge everything that is about life. Right-wingers are totally pro-death. It turned out, of course, that he was right. His work on ozone depletion made him a prominent voice for scientists concerned about global warming also. But, of course, the right-wingers would tell you none of that's happening. Of course not. That's because they are all insane. Rowland said at a White House climate change roundtable in 1997, he said, quote, "Isn't it a responsibility of scientists if you believe that you have found something that can affect the environment? Isn't it your responsibility to do something about it? Enough so that action actually takes place? If not us, who? If not now, when?" He died at his home Saturday, complications from Parkinson's. He was 84. The smog out of my eyes. Our money trained the madman. Our leaders gave them cash. They thought they could exploit them for their subterranean stash. When rulers kill their people, our leaders say it's of no concern to us. As long as we get our hands on that greasy, slimy stuff.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
It's come through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Vince Mosca. Thank you, Vince. He said, you and Kathy were first broadcast on Air America in the early August 2004 when Molly was about a week old. From that August until that November, I couldn't wait until 10 p.m. when my store closed and you came on to scream across the sky. What you and Kathy did in the summer and autumn of 2004 awakened too many in my view. While high on the presidency were stolen at the wild conclusion, you laid the tracks for many to see what was coming and what to try to do about it. Thanks so much, Mike. Here we go again. Yeah, well, thanks, Vince. I appreciate your support. Every once in a while you see just little bits and snatches and pieces of warnings about the environment. You find them in the oddest places. For example, editorial page of the Times the other day. Just a few sentences, changing the chemistry of Earth's oceans, it says. The oceans have always served as a sink for carbon dioxide, but the burning of fossil fuels since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, especially over the last 40 years, has given them more than they can safely absorb, the ocean said. As a result is acidification, the change in the chemical balance that threatens the ocean's web of life. In Earth's history, the Times says, there have been many episodes of acidification, mainly from prolonged volcanic eruptions. According to a new research review by paleooceanographers at Columbia University, published in Science magazine, the oceans may be turning acid far faster than any time in the past 300 million years. Changing something as fundamental as the pH of seawater, a measurement of how acid or alkaline it is, has profound effects. Increased acidity attacks the shells of shellfish and the skeletal foundation of corals, dissolving the calcium carbonate they're made of. Coral reefs are among the most diverse ecosystems on the planet. Ocean acidification threatens the corals and every other species that makes its living on the reefs. The authors of the study tried to determine which past acidification events offer the best comparison to what is happening now. Well, the closest analogies are catastrophic events, often associated with intense volcanic activity, resulting in major extinctions. The difference is that these events covered thousands of years. We have acidified the oceans in a matter of decades, with no signs that we have the political will to slow, much less halt, the process. Little bit here, little piece there, little comment over there, little statement here, report comes out over there. But of course, the fundamentalists on this planet will tell you, 300 million years, what are you talking about? Oh, God, there they go again with that evolution stuff. You know the first two syllables in evolution. Evil. What a shame. I mean, as long as politicians respond more to religious imperatives than scientific imperatives, we're doomed. There's no questioning that. We're doomed. So, when you come across these articles, as I do, articles and comments and reports and warnings over and over and over again, and you realize that there's really nothing you can do. I mean, recycling your tin cans doesn't do a damn thing. Absolutely nothing. It just doesn't. buying a hybrid car does absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing in stopping global warming. The only thing that would reverse global warming, not stop it. It's too late. It's not going to stop. We are, it's like being in a vehicle that's moving forward at 100 miles an hour. Once you begin to apply the brakes, you don't stop. You keep going forward until you gradually, slowly stop, unless you hit the brick wall first, in which case you're dead. So recycling your garbage or, you know, paper, not plastic, or plastic, not paper, or whatever the current fad is, you know, cleaning up your neighborhood on Earth Day. You know, those are nice little civic things to do. They really are. But where it concerns global warming, nothing. Zero. No effect. It's a nice cosmetic thing, cleaning up your neighborhood. There are neighborhoods around Atlanta that just littered with trash. You know, who cares, right? So picking all that garbage up and recycling it and, you know, putting the cans over here and the plastic over there and the paper over here, that's a great idea. But is it going to do anything about global warming? Absolutely, unequivocally, nothing. Zero. The only thing that would do something about global warming is to stop today, tonight, first thing in the morning, using fossil fuels. And then hold on to your ass, because we may or may not make it before we hit the brick wall. But, as you know and I know, that's not going to happen. The acidification of the ocean is going to continue. The pollution of the atmosphere is going to continue. The ozone is going to continue to deteriorate, even though, as I mentioned earlier tonight, the man who figured out what was happening, it got us to kind of put the brakes on the CFCs, but when you're going 100 miles an hour, applying the brakes only means that you're going to slow down. It doesn't mean you're going to stop. The phone lines are open if you want to join in. 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. This hour is being sponsored by Gray Brecken at University of California. Gray writes, do you know of, you remember, this is the organization, well, do you know of public works in your community built by the WPA, CCC, or other New Deal agencies to get us out of the last Great Depression? If so, please contact us at livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu. We will add it to our national map to remind Americans of what government can and should do to benefit all of us. Living New Deal. .berkeley.edu. If you know of WPA, CCC, or other New Deal agency projects in your community. Thanks, Gray. Um, 877-996-2556 is the number. What else have we got here? This is from Brent in Philadelphia, who writes, Mike, purchased a podcast a few months ago, and I've enjoyed your show ever since. Seeing all the stupidity by these vile right-wingers makes me cringe, and listening to your show really helps me to vent as well as keep informed. It's great to hear someone else who despises these women-hating, environment-destroying, union-bashing, soulless bastards as much as I do. I know you're just sick of dealing with them at this point, but you should take more right-wing nut phone calls. It's so funny to listen to you hit them with knowledge as they squirm through their Fox News-filled memory banks for a lame-ass comeback. You destroy them every time they call and should do it more often. Anyway, I love your show, and I will continue to support it. Keep it lit. Brent in Philly. I understand what you're saying, Brent, but it's kind of like, you know, when we were kids and we used to do something very cruel, you know, pull the wings off of a fly that we would catch. And then, you know, it was pretty awful, dropping ants into spider webs. Ooh. Well, my dealing with right wingers who have the temerity to call this program is about the same. I mean, I've said this before, in 25 years of doing talk radio, I don't remember any single caller who would identify himself or herself as a conservative or right winger or neo-fascist or a Republican, you know, pick your own term, who is able to maintain a conversation longer than just to scream something at me or to come up with stupidity of a sort that is just intolerable. I can't do it. I can't engage with people like that. I can't do it. I know it makes for great fun, and it's laughable, and it's funny, and they are surely kind of idiotic in what they say, but I can't do it. You know, I just can't, because I usually wind up just shrieking, you know, and you know what I'm saying. Seth is in Gulfport, Mississippi, listening online. Hello, Seth.
Hello, Mike. Long time no talk either.
Yeah, it has been.
But anyway, you were talking about the Mississippi primary. Basically, for those who don't know, we got the Mississippi voter ID law now, and I'm willing to bet that many right-wingers are going to get bitten in the ass because they're required to have that ID to vote.
Yeah, we have the same law here in Georgia, but you know what that's about. That's about voter suppression. That has nothing to do with expanding the voting base in this country and making sure that people exercise their right to vote. It is a Republican, neoconservative idea of crushing people who want to vote, because the right-wingers are convinced that most people who want to vote, and this is true, are Democrats or progressives or liberals or what have you, or if not that, they're centrists. They're people who may not be liberal in their overall political point of view, but they sure as hell aren't to the far right like these thugs are who run so many of the states now. So that's what the voter ID law is about. You know that, of course.
Yeah, but I ain't worried about that. If I remember correctly, I think Louisiana's voter ID free. I was planning to move over there this summer, so.
No, you live in the South. Most of this happens in the South, Seth.
Exactly.
You're right. It's an attempt to suppress the Negroes or the immigrant Mexicans who become citizens or who are already here as citizens. It's to suppress the vote of anyone other than the Caucasians who feel that they have exclusive rights. To just like the framers of the U.S. Constitution thought that they had exclusive rights on electing officials or making decisions. So, yeah, it's all over the South, Seth. I don't think they have a voter ID law in New York or Oregon or Washington State. There may be some Midwestern states. I'm sure there probably are, because Republicans are really picking up on this idea. This is a way to keep the women at home where they belong, is to, so to speak, is to make everybody have photo ID. So for older people who might want to vote Democratic, they have maybe no way to get out and get an ID card, or people have been voting for 60 years and all of a sudden they're told, well, now you need a card. You know, it's voter suppression. That's what that's all about. Thanks, Seth. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Yeah, we have that here in Georgia. And that's really wonderful, isn't it? This is how Republicans, this is how these right-wing fundamentalist freaks, these Dominionists, this is how they make their sick point of view prevail. Not in the open forum of ideas that these right-wingers are always talking about. Not in that area at all, because in that area they always lose. So rather than expand the conversation, you narrow the voting universe. And you can't do it by, you know, saying, well, women, we're going to take away your right to vote. And black folk, you've had enough fun with your right to vote. You can't do that anymore. You used to be able to do that. You can't do that now. So what do? You just say to people, okay, this is what you need to vote. Now, whether or not that constitutes a poll tax, which in some areas it does, the way they get around it, they say, well, you can get one free. So it's not a poll tax. Madness. Bob is in Birmingham listening on XM. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, how you doing there, Mike?
I'm all right. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I wanted to call up and talk about these wars that Obama's getting us into.
Yeah.
That he did not even get approval for, such as the conflict in Libya. And now I hear about a conflict in Syria coming up. And we all know the Iran, it seems inevitable to me, Bob.
No, you're Bob. I'm Mike. Well, look, Bob, let me give you a quick news flash here. You probably already know. It's not just Obama. It's Obama, and before him it was George Bush, and before him it was Bill Clinton, and before him it was Herbert Walker Bush, and before him it was Ronald Reagan, and before him it was Jimmy Carter, and before him it was Gerald Ford. And before him, it was Dick Nixon. And before him, it was Lyndon Johnson. And before him, it was John Kennedy. And before him, it was Eisenhower. And before him, it was Harry Truman. You see, we haven't had a declaration of war as required by the Constitution, Bob, since December 9th, 1941. So it's not just Obama. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
Mother, do you think she's good enough?
It's about 22 past the hour. Something else I wanted to share with you. Bill McKibben, the environmental activist, got a piece at Reader Supported News, I think today. He He says almost a year ago, no one had heard of the Keystone XL pipeline. Even 4 months ago, a poll of 300 so-called energy insiders still found 97% predicting it would get its permit, but it didn't. TransCanada can, of course, reapply, but that will be another battle down the road. For now, people power. And the largest civil disobedience action in 30 years. 800,000 messages to the Senate in a single day. Bodies encircling the White House shoulder to shoulder, five deep, overturned those odds. And though most Americans don't know it, when was it last? Friday was International Women's Day. Appropriate in this case because many of the very strongest fighters against this project from the very beginning were women of unusual distinction. And Bill writes, I was reminded of this earlier this week when Deborah Whiteplume was arrested on the Lakota Reservation for blocking trucks carrying giant equipment up to the tar sands. She's an eloquent fighter, part of the large crew of indigenous leaders who were the first to sound the alarm about the tar sands and have been at the center of the battle ever since. But this time she wasn't outside the White House or at a congressional hearing. She was on a lonely reservation road with a small crowd of other people facing down giant semis and tribal police. You need to read her full account of what happened because it's powerful and because she's a great writer. This is my favorite passage out of what she wrote. You can find this. Just Google Deborah Whiteplume. This is what she wrote, part of it. On the ride home from jail, I shared with my children my jail time. They were curious what the cell looked like and what I did in there for 3 hours. I told them it was empty. Nothing in there but a toilet, not even drinking water. I told them I just paced back and forth and read the graffiti scratch into the walls that said things like, this cell is 11 by 6, or Tristan loves Luke, or Angel and Wildflower have outlaw love, and I used to work here, now I am in here. My teens were sad, but understood why this happened, and they were glad me and their papa were coming home. McKibben says, I thought of Women's Day again in the afternoon when the votes in the Senate were being tallied and we were all doing the digital equivalent of biting our nails. After the drama of the arrests and of the encircling of the White House had died down some, the hard work of maintaining this victory in the oil-soaked Congress fell to a small core of Capitol Hill environmentalists. The work they did was not glamorous. It was absolutely necessary, however. And in the end, the two events on the Lakota Reservation and on the Hill were the perfect summation of the whole Keystone campaign. The most grassroots of activists meshed easily and powerfully with the most entrenched of Washington enviros. There was no bickering or infighting. People seemed naturally to take the parts they were good at and trust others to do likewise. The you can read this at Reader Supported News, Bill McKibben. Of course, that fight is not over. As a matter of fact, you can make the argument that that fight against the Keystone XL Keystone, whatever the hell this pipeline, has only just begun. Obama has not said we're not going to do this. The State Department has not said we're not going to do this. The Environmental Protection Agency has not said we're not going to do this. What they have said is decision would be made, after the election. So, pay attention, right? Sanchez is in Long Beach, California, listening online. Hello, Sanchez.
I've escaped the ghetto, senor. Someone left the bedroom window open, and I managed to get out.
How'd you get to Long Beach?
With 5 weeks of searching for the perfect location, I'm 5 blocks from the beach.
Oh man, you like your new apartment? I take it, right?
I love it. The problem here is because of the loans, and you know, most homeowners are distressed right now. As a matter of fact, this leads into one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. I wound up on this list of homes that are in pre-foreclosure and are subject to rent to own because the homeowners are distressed. And I passed on this because I don't want to get this. That's like a bad karma thing to do, is occupying somebody else's house.
Yeah. Hey, Sanchez, hold on a minute. I got to do some a break here, do some commercials while we still have them. Stay there. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Gray Brecken, who writes, do you know of public works in your community built by the WPA, the CCC, or other New Deal agencies to get us out of the last Great Depression back in the 1930s? If so, please contact us at livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu. We will add it to our national map to remind Americans of what government can and should do to benefit all of us. Thank you, Gray. It's livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu. Especially if you live in the South, there's so many of those old CCC and WPA projects here in the South because the South was, well, I guess it still is, so far behind everything. Sanchez, now, you live in Long Beach, you have a new apartment, and it's a foreclosure apartment, is that what you were saying?
Actually, no, it's not a foreclosure. I wound up on a list of pre-foreclosures. I was going through searching services to look for an apartment.
Right.
And I wound up on what seems to be a new trend where these agencies are offering these homes. Obviously, the banks want to get rid of these things. The banksters are doing pre-foreclosures of these distressed homes. They're subject to rent or rent to own, depending on what you negotiate with the homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
And dovetailing into what Occupy LA, I went to their Occupy event. They had a press conference at the LA County Recorder's office.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for this is it's the scene of a crime, and you know this, that there's evidence of fraud in the millions of mortgages and foreclosures that are going on nationally. Well, anyways, the ones that are kept at the L.A. County Recorder's Office says here that the San Francisco audit showed 99% of foreclosures had questionable activity,
mm-hmm.
and they discovered, Occupy L.A. discovered that 84% had clear violations of law, and over 66% had four or more violations of the law. So they're taking action. Homeowners gathered today at the L.A. County Recorder's Office to get copies of their loan paperwork.
Well, you know, Sanchez, I have a question. Well, I don't mean to interrupt, but since all of these banks and lending institutions are insured by an agency of the federal government, the FDIC, or the FSLIC or some of these other agencies, they therefore come under the jurisdiction of the Justice Department. Why doesn't Eric Holder issue a statement that says all foreclosures will stop immediately until each and every one can be checked for fraud, and if fraud is found, each and every one will be prosecuted? Now, that would be an enormous-ass job, and nobody's denying that it would be. But if the law is being broken, and it is, and as a result of breaking this law, people are being tossed out, families are being destroyed, children are being upended, the homeless population is increasing, so much of the community of the United States is being thrown into chaos, and yet the Obama Justice Department does nothing like this. Now, granted, they're trying to cut deals, and but these lending, these mortgage banks, Sanchez, you know as well as I do, $100 million here, $100 million there, it's lunch money. They don't care.
Obviously not. They're all robo-signing this stuff. So what LA Occupy LA called for today is a moratorium on foreclosures. That's why they went to Efrain Escobedo. He's the L.A. County Recorder and the L.A. County Recorder's Office. It's the recorder himself that says the evidence is clear. We don't need to pay for any more audits. So
right.
Occupy L.A. is saying that this is the scene of a crime with all of these robo-signings. The gentleman that I wish I could connect you with, his name is Carlos Manquin. I mentioned him last time I called. He has all of the information, and he was there as well. There's so much information that he has about this, but I'm just kind of breaking the ice here to tell you that this is going to be a bigger story than just what's happening here in Los Angeles. This is a national story because, obviously, homes across the country are in pre-foreclosure. It's a trend that, like I said, I wound up on somebody's list. They told me, here, pay $10. We'll send you a list of all these homes in distress. So they're making money with these agencies as well. So, like I said, it's a bad karma thing to do. I wanted nothing to do with it, and so I moved on. The gentleman, as I'm saying, that spoke today was filled with information. This was only covered by Channel 34, the Spanish language channel here. But there were lots of people that had questions about this, and so this is worth investigating, because obviously a lot of homes are going to go this way, because there's evidently a lot of people that want this sort of thing. But it's bad karma. I want nothing to do with something.
Well,
like this,
not only is it bad karma, it's also illegal as hell. You know, there is a day of reckoning coming, Sanchez, and I think you know that. I think I know that. I think a lot of people in this country understand, whether we call it karma or finally the Justice Department catches up with these thieving sons of bitches. But eventually, there will be a day of reckoning. If you would, Sanchez, I got to move on here. But if you would, send me a link or something from this person you're talking about, and let me take a look at it. You know, I'm aware that that's going on. It's going on here in the Atlanta area too. It's going on all over the country. It's not just LA. It's all over the country, and I you know, we're all on the same page about that. But if you want to send me some info, send it on, buddy. And good luck in your new apartment. Call me again. Take care, Sanchez. Take care. What do we got here? Oh, yeah. Bridget writes, a friend of mine was looking for a word to describe the misogynistic, patriarchal hate mongers who are waging the war on women. She couldn't find one that described them well enough, so she created one. The hatriarchy. The hatriarchy. If you like it, feel free to use it. That's a good one, the hatriarchy. I love that. Bill in Ottawa sent me an email here. Dick Cheney canceled a speaking engagement in Toronto, Ontario. Why? Well, here's the story from Bill. Former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney has canceled an April appearance in Toronto, citing concerns that Canada is too dangerous. Jesus, God. Ryan Ruppert, president of promotions company Spectre Live Corp., which had booked Cheney for an April 24th appearance at the Metro Toronto Convention Center, said, quote, Cheney felt that in Canada, the risk of violent protest was simply too high, end quote. In September last, Cheney was speaking at a private club in Vancouver when protesters massed outside the front door, harassing ticket holders and in one instance, choking a security guard. Oh, my God, who wrote this? Oh, the National Post. Okay, well, that's why. The former vice president was reportedly held inside the building for more than 7 hours as Vancouver police in riot gear dispersed the demonstrators. Ruppert, noting Cheney's history of heart problems, said, quote, God forbid there was ever an emergency. Think about that for a second. Ticket holders can either bring in their tickets for a refund or go to a replacement talk by author Mark Stein. He's the backup guy, I guess. So Cheney is afraid. Well, Dick, how could you be afraid? You ordered an attack on an entire country. You slaughtered hundreds of thousands of people. You made sure that thousands of American military personnel died with your phony war. You're afraid to go give a talk? Rush. Or I'm sorry, might as well be the same guy. Dick. Oh, that's right. I remember back in the 60s, you said you had more important things to do than to bother with the military. Unless you're ordering other people to go kill and be killed, then it's a different story. Right, Dick? Dennis is in Crescyville, PA. Hello, Dennis.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
How you doing?
I'm all right.
Who am I talking to?
Who do you want to talk to?
I'd like to talk to Mike Malloy.
Okay, well, you got him.
Where is he?
Okay, thanks, Dennis. You have a nice evening. I don't know where he is. I have no idea. Mike is in St. Louis. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike. It's Mike in St. Louis.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about how Rush Limbaugh got inducted into the Missouri Celebrity Hall of Fame.
He got inducted, or it's just a question?
Yeah, no, they said they're going to induct him. Like, people are trying to prevent it, but...
Oh, yeah, he hasn't yet, right. Well, I can understand why. I mean, he's in the Radio Hall of Fame. I don't get it. Why not put Joseph Goebbels in the Radio Hall of Fame? He used radio in Germany to trick the German people into practicing genocide. I don't know. Limbaugh, I guess he will pay off whoever has to be paid off so that he gets the honor. I don't know. I have no idea.
Do you think he deserves it, though?
Do I?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I don't know what I don't know what it is. What is the Missouri Hall of Fame?
It's for celebrity. He's definitely a celebrity.
Oh, well, I guess, yeah, he would deserve that. Mike, I got to move on. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Sponsored by Gray Brecken, who writes, do you know of public works in your community built by the WPA, the CCC, or other New Deal agencies to get us out of the last Great Depression? If you do, if you know of these sites, please contact us at livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu, and we'll add it to our national map to remind Americans of what government can and should do to benefit all of us. Thanks, Gray. Appreciate the sponsorship. Back to your calls. Phil is in Allentown, PA, listening online. Hello, Phil.
No, it's Bill.
Huh?
It's Bill.
Oh, Bill. Hi, Bill.
Right, listener number 25.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, sorry about that. Hey, when you were talking about the second time you mentioned the thing about WPI, when I looked up a couple of things, and there's one called Jordan Park. It's like just north of Allentown.
Mm-hmm.
It's right where the Lehigh Valley Dairy used to be. Some people who are listening to this area may know where that is.
Yeah.
There's a couple other things. It's like a stony walk. Down by
home. Wait, we lost you, Bill. Talk right into your phone. We're losing you.
Okay. Yeah,
there you go.
A place called Stony Walk down by Martin Luther King Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like right underneath the 8th Street Bridge. And the people who live here around here know where that is, too. And that's a WPA.
Well, you know what you could do, Bill, is just send a list of these to this website, livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu. They're looking for places like that. They're going to mark them on the map that they're putting together out at University of California, Berkeley. But you ought to send it to them. It's very simple, livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu, and let them know where these places are located. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You know what? Also, our governor is going to sign a voter suppression law tomorrow, Tom Corbett.
Is that another voter ID? You got to have a photo?
Yeah.
Yep, okay. Yep. Well, it's not just the South. Yeah, the South started it. It started down here, I believe. And now some of the more rancid of these Republicans up north are following suit. And it's strictly to suppress. I think what they're trying to do is suppress all the voters in Philadelphia.
Right. Well, you know what? He also wants to get a vaginal probe thing here up in Pennsylvania, too.
I'd like to give him one.
He wants to do that, too. He wants to pull a Bob McDonald.
Yeah. Well,
he wants to do everything that's, you know.
Eventually, people like this, Bill. There's going to be a posse of women. I just see this, and I'm waiting for the movie. A posse of women are going to show up on the horizon, and they're going to be thoroughly pissed off, and they're going to say, "Okay, we've been gaming with you suckers since 1920, since we got the vote, and we've watched what you've done. We've had enough." And you know what these women are going to have? They're going to have chains, and they're going to have pinchers, you know, these metal cutters, you know, these things that you can cut through padlocks with. And they're going to find these men, see? And they're going to get these guys, and they're going to sit them down on a chair. And they're going to tie them to the chair in such a way, well, let your imagination just wonder what they're going to do with those padlock cutters.
Hello?
I mean, it can't be much longer, Bill, and that's going to happen. Bill, thanks. I got to move on here. Appreciate you checking in. Randy's in Branson, Missouri. Hello, Randy.
Hello, Mike. How are you tonight?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Good. Hey, I was just having a comment. My latest rant or angst from the right came from watching that Game Change movie on HBO.
Yeah.
A few nights ago, I just was so disgusted after seeing that. I took it as pretty factually accurate, and to think that McCain and them knew shortly after nominating Palin that they made a huge mistake, and instead of just saying, "We made a mistake and we nominated a buffoon for vice president who is totally unqualified to be president," they go ahead and try to shield her and gloss over her and coax her and coach her. And,
right.
You know, it's more about winning to them than doing anything for the country or providing leadership or anything like that. They just kind of said, "Well, we've got a buffoon here. Let's try to get elected anyway." It's just beyond me that they would do that to the United States.
Well,
go
ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's all about power, and it's all about winning, and it's all about just, we cannot tolerate a progressive or a little common sense in the White House. It's got to be us, or I'm so eternally perturbed, eternally irritated that I can't live with myself.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll just do anything to win, you know, whether it's good for the country or not.
Well, and here's the weird part too, Randy. Well, it's not weird. I mean, it's the accepted result of McCain allowing his advisors to dump this crazy woman on his ticket. McCain will always be known as the man who, although he was a moderate Republican on so many issues, not that that means anything, but he was. He wasn't a teabagger. Sarah Palin was a religious, maniacal teabagger who got herself on the Republican ticket, thanks to McCain, and that opened the floodgates for the vermin that are the teabaggers that have utterly and absolutely damn near destroyed the country. So McCain will have the unlucky historical footnote to his career as having been the man who opened the door to this madness. I got to leave there, Randy. Thanks. Quick break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back, Truth Seekers. And this hour, gosh, everybody who's sponsoring our tonight has had a lot to say. I appreciate that. This is from Vince Mosca. Vince writes, Mike and Kathy, thanks so much for all you do. From the Democratic candidate in the 2010 Michigan State House District 94 race, sorry, I lost. You and Kathy were first broadcast on Air America in the early August of 2004 when Molly was about 1 week old, if memory serves. From that August until that November, I couldn't wait until 10 p.m. when my store closed and you came on to scream across the sky. What you and Kathy did in the summer and autumn of 2004 awakened so many, in my view. While Ohio and the presidency were stolen at the wild conclusion, you laid the tracks for many to see what was coming and what to try to do about it. Thanks so much, Mike. Here we go again. Vince and Saginaw. Yeah, really, Vince, that's the truth. And speaking of that, listen, I have to mention to you one more time, if you've been following the news, you know what's happening in the wonderful world of talk radio right now. And there is a concerted attack now on this program, my program. I am being, believe it or not, made the equivalent of Rush Limbaugh. It's astonishing. So, you know, we've managed to survive for 3 years without a parent network, like I've said earlier this evening, and without the kind of infrastructure that, you know, it's Kathy and me. That's it. That's our entire organization. And we've done okay, managed to keep the rent paid and, or the mortgage payment, I should say. But, the attitude out there right now is to bring this program to an end. And the only way they can do this is by these unrelenting attacks. It goes after the advertiser, goes after the network, goes after whoever. And that's fine. I mean, that's the way it goes. That's the way it goes in the free market, so to speak. So how do we survive this? Well, if it's possible for you to sponsor an hour of the program or purchase a podcast or you know, on a yearly basis, that's what we're looking for. The hourly sponsorships are great, and we appreciate them. But what we're really looking for, like I mentioned, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, is to build our subscriber base, our podcast subscriber base, up around 5,000-6,000 solid yearly or monthly customers. We're around 2,800 right now, so a long way to go. You can help. All you have to do is purchase a podcast, go to MikeMalloy.com, and all the information's there. But seriously and truthfully, we are targeted, absolutely targeted to end this program. So if you want to help, we don't ask you necessarily to make a donation. We ask you to subscribe to the podcast or sponsor an hour. It's up to you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Remember I told you about the Reverend Marcel Guarnizo, the priest who refused to give a woman communion at her mother's funeral because this priest made the assumption that she was a lesbian because she lived with another woman. Whether she is or not is beside the point. Anyway, this priest has been suspended. He was the priest at Gaithersburg's Maryland, St. John Newman Catholic Church outside of D.C. And it was reported, like we told you back then, that he covered the bowl with his hand containing the Eucharist as Barbara Johnson approached him at her own mother's funeral. I can't quite conceive of that. There was a period of my life when I had a lot of religious surroundings and training and upbringing, so on and so forth, and not Catholic. But I cannot imagine a priest saying to a woman who was at a funeral mass for her own mother, "You can't touch this." The priest is reported to have said to her, quote, "I cannot give you communion because you live with a woman, and that's a sin," according to the church, end quote. Now, the incident was widely reported, created quite an outcry, and Ms. Johnson received an apology from the Catholic Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. And now the Washington Post reports on a letter dated March 9th that was sent by the Reverend Barry Nestout, who is a top administrator for the diocese, announcing this priest's removal for reasons of, quote, engaging in intimidating behavior toward parish staff and others that is incompatible with proper priestly ministry, end quote. So he was kind of a jerk to his staff, too, huh? The letter reads as follows, quote, I write to inform you that effective today, Father Marcel Guarnizo's assignment at St. John Newman Parish is withdrawn, and he has been placed on administrative leave with his priestly faculties removed until such time as an inquiry into his actions at the parish is completed. This action was taken after I received credible allegations that Father Guarnizo has engaged in intimidating behavior toward parish staff and others that is incompatible with proper priestly ministry. Given the grave nature of these allegations, the quote goes on, and in light of the conclusion in the parish and the concerns expressed by parishioners, Father Guarnizo is prohibited from exercising any priestly ministry in the Archdiocese of Washington until all matters can be appropriately resolved, with the hope that he might return to priestly ministry. Sincerely in Christ, Most Reverend Barry Nestout, Vicar General and Moderator of the Curia. Now, it's unclear when or if ever this priest will return to St. John Newman Catholic Church. You know, it's too bad that they didn't send letters like this and suspensions when priests were accused of buggering little boys. Fukushima, we are at the 1 year mark, roughly, since this horror occurred in Japan. Fukushima has become the word that you know what we're referring to, the Daiichi, there you go, Daiichi nuclear power generating plant, which I believe had five or six reactors inside, all of whom were destroyed by the tidal wave and the earthquake. New radiation tests carried out by the EnviroReporter have recorded the highest levels of radiation in California ever. A March 6th test of a HEPA filter recorded radiation levels 668%, or 6.68 times the normal background radiation levels to be expected in California. The test took place 43 days after initial tests showed a 130% increase since January 22nd. Now it's gone up again. The EnviroReporter states, quote, the California Highway Patrol considers anything over three times background or 300% of background above a trigger level to a hazardous material situation, end quote. If something were traveling down the highway or something targeted for demolition, this is twice that. And as the Intel Hub reports, considering that it is now documented fact that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and other U.S. agencies work to cover up the dangers posed to the United States from the Fukushima disaster, these independent radiation tests are absolutely paramount to get out the story out to the American people. Without them, we would all be victims of the corrupt government and their open pro-nuclear stance. And the corrupt government is made corrupt by the influence and infiltration of capitalist slash corporate America, which has made a determination that a couple of years ago that it would buy the government, and it is damn near a fait accompli. We'll be right back.
Crawling in the dirt, and for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in a starched white shirt, you will find bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. A couple emails here from Helen in Minnesota. Mike, let's start asking this question. Why don't Republicans address the illegal OxyContin use that insurance companies pay for? Gee, Helen writes, I wonder. Remind listeners that this hypocrite Limbaugh has the nerve to speak out about the issue of women being covered for simple legal hormone pills while he was busy in the past illegally pumping down the opiate narcotic controlled substance heroin-like high-inducing drug OxyContin. Really? Listeners need to know the fact that OxyContin is a narcotic opiate that the medical field states gives a heroin-like high, and that is why it's so heavily addicting. Heroin. People were listening to a guy on the radio who was taking heroin-like illegal drugs. Advertisers were advertising with this guy. Wow, you want to advertise with a known drug addict who is probably right now still taking methadone, which is synthetic heroin for OxyContin withdrawal? Google OxyContin and read how it is categorized. Read how addicts are put on methadone for withdrawal, just like heroin addicts. And I sympathize with those regular folks out there struggling to withdraw from heroin. Not this guy, though. Birth control pills, my butt. Limbaugh is getting off easy with the media people neglecting every day to mention the facts about Limbaugh's illegal drug use while he's hypocritically ranting and lying about this phony, petty, made-up birth control issue. Media need to remind people of Limbaugh's past illegal drug use every day, please. Thanks, Helen in Minnesota. Yeah, well, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about that one, Helen. I take your point clearly and rapidly. Even somebody like Limbaugh, I've got to feel a little bit of compassion, not sympathy, but maybe compassion for the fact of drug addiction. It's horrifying. It's a monster. And I'm not just talking about Limbaugh's drug of choice. I'm talking about any substance abuse, alcohol, nicotine, drugs you get on the street. It's one thing to experiment with drugs, and I think most people over the course of their lives, I said most, do experiment with various and sundry drugs. I don't know why people experiment with the pharmaceuticals. Those drugs are designed specifically for a certain physical condition, or at least that's what the drug companies tell you. But if you listen, and you can hear it anytime you hear a pharmaceutical commercial on television, no matter what the drug is, they are now required, of course, and they say it in a gibberishy kind of way, required to tell their potential users what this drug can do in terms of side effects or otherwise unwanted reactions inside your body from this stuff. As far as so-called street drugs are concerned, I think a lot of people have tried various street drugs, marijuana, hashish, cocaine. Some people have even gotten a little bit crazy and tried heroin. I think anyone, I'll just go ahead and say this, I think anyone who puts a needle in their arm for a drug high, I'm not talking about addicts. I'm talking about people just, oh, hey, try this. I think anyone who puts a needle in their arm is either insane or thinks they're invincible, neither of which is true. And this is no new development with me. I've always had this sense about, excuse me, about injectable drugs looking for a high. That's a good way to kill yourself. I have lost a couple of friends to the use of needles, one to AIDS, where he got the disease as transmitted through needle sharing, and another one just to an overdose. And it is, you know, using a needle is crazy, is just simply crazy, or a person thinks they're invincible. But I'm not going to go off on a drug rant here. I'm just saying I do have a bit of compassion for people who are hooked, even somebody like Limbaugh, who is such a hypocrite, as Helen points out, is such a liar. Is such a tool of corporate media or corporate establishment, or maybe it's vice versa. So yeah, if you're a younger person and you're experimenting, I would say stay away from needles, and for God's sake, stay away from cigarettes. Cigarettes will kill you. It's one of those products, like a gun, that if used exactly as it is designed, will result in a death. Oh, you target practice? Oh, I see. All right. We'll be right back.
Get ready. You gotta move. You may be high. You may be low. You may be down. No place to go. But when the Lord gets ready, you gotta move. You gotta move. You gotta move.
Quiet is contained.
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder.
25 before the hour. This hour being sponsored by Vince Mosca, who is the, in 2010, he was Michigan State House candidate in District 94, Democrat. And he writes, sorry I lost, but you and Kathy were first broadcast on Air America in early August of 2004 when Molly was about a week old, if memory serves. Your memory serves. From that August until that November, I couldn't wait until 10 p.m. when my store closed and you came on to scream across the sky. What you and Kathy did in the summer and autumn of 2004 awakened so many in my view. While Ohio and the presidency were stolen at the well conclusion, you laid the tracks for many to see what was coming and what to try to do about it. Thanks so much, Mike. Here we go again. Vince and Saginaw. Those are very kind words, Vince. I appreciate it very much. Thank you. I found this, was it yesterday or today? It's a rather brief editorial in the LA Times. It's about the pending Supreme Court case about the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act that President Obama and the Democrats got through the became a matter of law. By the way, I will be up in D.C. along with other folks covering that hearing towards the end of this month, the Supreme Court hearing. I'll be broadcasting live from there with several guests that will have some insights about what the law is about, and perhaps what it should have been, and certainly, as word comes out of the Supreme Court, how the deliberations are going there. So it should be kind of interesting. That's towards the end of this month. But a woman named Mary Brown, apparently that's her name, is the, it's her, her case against the health care reform law that's pending before the Supreme Court. And in her lawsuit, she argues that the government shouldn't be able to force her, or anyone for that matter, to carry health insurance. She was joined by three other individuals and a small business trade association. And, of course, she's asking that the justices rule that the law's insurance mandate requiring people to buy it is unconstitutional and that the rest of the act should be thrown out with it. But there's some things that you might want to know about her own situation. In the first place, let me digress. Is it unconstitutional to be forced to buy auto insurance? See, nobody's ever answered that for me. I'm sure Prairie 2 would shoot me an email on that one. But in so many states, you're required, if you want to drive a car. Now, maybe that's the difference. You can always say to your state insurance commissioner, I'm not going to drive a car, so I'm not going to buy car insurance. Okay. Health insurance is a little bit different because everyone eventually either gets sick or gets to the point where they need some sort of assistance. And, you know, unless you're Superman, and I don't think you are. But let me tell you a little bit about Mary Brown, who initiated this case in the Supreme Court. The LA Times' David Savage reported that Brown and her husband have fallen on hard times since filing the lawsuit, largely because their auto repair business in Florida, that's where this woman lives, has failed. The couple filed for bankruptcy protection, asking a federal court to wipe out close to $60,000 in consumer debt. Significantly, their unpaid bills include $3,000 owed to a local hospital and physicians group and $1,700 owed to out-of-state medical specialists. Huh? Now, those disclosures, you might say, transforms Miss Brown from a champion of individual liberty into an example of a problem that the new law was designed to address. As the LA Times says, uninsured or underinsured Americans rack up about $60 billion in medical bills every year that they can't afford, which forces doctors and hospitals to pass those costs on to federal taxpayers and those patients who can pay their bills. Now, it's not impinging, the Times says, on personal freedom to ask people to cover their own medical tabs. The mechanism that Congress created to do that is the individual mandate. Same thing that was created in Mitt Romney's Massachusetts. Same thing that the Republicans 10, 15, 20 years ago were insisting. This plan came out of, I believe, the American Enterprise Institute, a right-wing think tank. The whole idea of the Affordable Health Care Act, or what these right-wing thugs call Obamacare, it came from Republicans, from conservatives. This is back when, when a couple of them that were still sane instead of the drooling, dribbling maniacs that they are now. Anyway, the insurance mandate and the premium subsidies in the health care law, the Affordable Health Care Act, or as the right-wingers call it, Obamacare, are expected to significantly reduce the amount of uncompensated care and cost shifting. Now, who does the cost get shifted to? When you have someone like Mary Brown who's suing to have this thrown out, and yet she has thousands of dollars of unpaid doctor and hospital bills. Mary Brown is telling you and me to pay her bill. Takes a lot of balls, I swear it does. Pay her bill. Meantime, she's suing. Or she has brought, she's not suing, she has brought to the Supreme Court a case demanding that this law, the Affordable Care Act, be rendered unconstitutional and therefore thrown out. Now, if that's not displaying a tremendous amount of chutzpah, if you don't like the word balls, I don't know what would. Wow. Anyway. To prevent people from signing up for coverage when they need treatment, then dropping it when they're healthy, Congress required that all adult Americans maintain health insurance coverage or pay a tax penalty. Ooh, see, there you go. So Mary Brown and her allies in their lawsuit contend that the law wouldn't work as Congress intended if the mandate were removed. In other words, if you didn't have to pay, then the law wouldn't work. So the entire act, the entire law has to be scrapped if the mandate is found unconstitutional. But her own complaints, the Times says, about the cost illustrate the flaw in that reasoning. Much of the law is aimed at slowing the growth of health care expenses and improving the quality of care. Those provisions are still valuable, regardless of what happens to the mandate. Nor do the insurance reforms fail if the mandate is eliminated. Lawmakers would simply have to find another mechanism to discourage people who can afford insurance from gaming the system. Now, Republicans in Congress have proposed several ways to do so, including financial penalties and waiting periods for people who seek insurance, you know, only if they need a treatment. But this is never going to happen, even if there is a restructuring of the Affordable Care Act, as long as Obama is president, because the right-wing Republicans won't allow it to happen. It would show as kind of a success, just like the Affordable Health Care Act, depending on where you stand, can be interpreted as a success. I don't see it that way. I think it's an abject, miserable, filthy failure. What we need in this country is single payer. But if this is the intermediary step, okay. I don't see someone suing to have this overturned who, unlike Mary Brown, doesn't owe the rest of us money for unpaid bills. Wow. Now, if there are flaws in this law, and there are, they are legion in the Affordable Health Care Act, then they need to be fixed, not have the entire act thrown out as unconstitutional. So I'll be curious to see what the John Roberts Court does where it concerns the Affordable Health Care Act. And I'll be in D.C. to cover this in a more direct way. And we'll pass the information on to you in longer form than you're going to get on the nightly news where they might devote 90 seconds to it. So that'll be towards the end of this month. But I just found it fascinating that the woman who brought the case into the Supreme Court against the health reform law is filing for bankruptcy and asking a federal court to wipe out her unpaid hospital, physicians, and medical bills. That's chutzpah for sure.
Misinformation follows like a plague. Nobody knew from time to time if the plans were changed. Oh, 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 if the plans were changed. You can beat us with wires. You can beat us with chains.
Before the hour, and again, this hour has been sponsored by Vince Mosca in Saginaw, Michigan, who ran as a Democrat for the 94th District House seat in Michigan back in 2010. And he lost. And he writes, you and Kathy were first broadcast on Air America in early August when Molly was about a week old back in 2004. And from August till November, I couldn't wait till 10 when my store closed and you came on to scream across the sky. What you and Kathy did in the summer of autumn 2004 awakened so many of my view while Ohio and the presidency were stolen. At the wild conclusion, you laid the tracks for many to see what was coming and what to try to do about it. Thanks so much, Mike. Here we go again. Thanks, Vince, for both hours tonight. I do appreciate it very much. They're going after Gary Trudeau again. Poor Gary Trudeau. Doonesbury cartoonist. You will follow the party line in this country, or we will destroy you. There's a Doonesbury strip on abortion law and the attack on women. There's one here that really got the right wing's bowels in an uproar. It's two panels. I have it in front of me here. There's a medical receptionist sitting behind a desk and a woman standing there. Clearly, someone came in for service. Medical technician says, would this be your first pregnancy termination? Young woman answers yes. The technician says, then you need to fill out this form. Please take a seat in the shaming room. Right. So, according to the Guardian of the UK, Doonesbury, cartoonist Gary Trudeau has defended his cartoon strip about abortion, which several U.S. newspapers are refusing to run. We're not going to run it. It's not a shaming room. What is it then? You know, isn't it a truism that you can tell when you have just about lost your government to totalitarianism, when the only people really fighting back and really catching the public eye are the comedians and the cartoonists? Isn't that an indication when media are not, news media, are not responding except in kind of a confrontational way? Or reporting on it. See, the news organizations dare not take sides because, you know, there's equivalence here. Just like there's equivalence between Malloy and Limbaugh. There is equivalence between those who want to denigrate and destroy women and their privacy and those who are just seeking to protect the little cluster of cells in there with fetal thing. Doonesbury said that the strip, which was published on Monday and scheduled to run all week, has been rejected by several papers, while others said they were switching it from the comic section to the editorial page. Yeah, the Atlanta newspaper here hasn't carried Doonesbury on the comic page, I don't know, for 6 or 7 years because of his outspokenness against, I think the issue this time was the war in Iraq. In an email exchange with The Guardian of the UK, Trudeau expressed dismay over the papers, all these papers in the U.S. decision, but he was unrepentant, describing as appalling and insane Republican state moves on women's health care. Good choice of words there, Gary. About 1,400 newspapers, including The Guardian, the UK, take the Doonesbury cartoon. The Guardian newspaper is running the cartoon as normal today. The strip deals specifically with the law introduced in Texas and other states requiring a woman who wants to have an abortion to have an ultrasound scan. And in some cases, as you know, in Virginia, this was to be done with a vaginal probe in an attempt to make her reconsider. Now, in this cartoon strip, after the woman shows up for her appointment and the technician or the nurse says, fill in this form and take a seat in the shaming room. Later, the patient says she does not want an intrusive vaginal examination, but she's told by the nurse, the male Republicans who run Texas require that all abortion seekers be examined with the 10-inch shaming rod. The nurse adds, by the authority invested in me by the GOP base, I the rape. Really? Way to go, Gary. By the authority vested in me by the Republican base, I the rape. The Kansas City Star is among the papers not running the cartoon in its normal slot. Editor told from that paper told Associated Press, we felt the content was too much for many of our readers of our family-friendly comic page. The Kansas City Star will use a replacement strip. A syndicator handling the request for replacement for Doonesbury says that 30 to 40 newspapers are asking about substitutes. So it's not just here in talk radio where we're under assault. It's also Gary Trudeau. Man. Trudeau told The Guardian he thought the issue of reproductive freedom had been settled while he had still been at school. That was the Supreme Court ruling in 1973, Roe v. Wade, which stated or restated the right of people to privacy. Trudeau wrote, 99% of women in America will or have used contraception during their lifetimes. To see these healthcare rights systematically undermined in state after state by the so-called party of limited government is appalling. Yeah, I would say so, Gary. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.